Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone. Every week, Steve will give us timely tips for caring for our plants. He'll answer your questions and give us expert advice. Now here's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone.
Okay.
Hey, we're on. Better turn on my microphone. I turned on Steve's. So let's walk through the garden with Steve Stone. And a lot of you probably were listening on Wednesday when he was on Insight with Jack Stogler. So if you missed that or you want to redo that, you can go into our archives and it's in there. But so good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Well, there's lots of stuff going on. Going to get some rain showers this afternoon, it looks like. Afternoon and tomorrow.
Yep.
Temperatures have been, you know, unbelievably mild for this time of year. So, you know, things are really growing, blooming, flowering. Some of the different things that have, well, we talked about last Saturday, some of the early flowering plants, trees like the saucer magnolias, some of those got nipped pretty bad with that cold night that we had. Looking forward, I don't see any freezing temperatures till next.
My forsythias didn't have any problem.
They bloomed well?
Yes.
You know, I noticed that, again, that a few magnolias that came out really early got hit, and then the forsythias usually kind of pick up after that or around the same time. And I did notice a lot of forsythia that made it through that frosty night really good. So the buds may not have quite been open, or they were just getting close to opening, and they tolerated that surprisingly well, because I have noticed with as much traveling as I do, driving to see clients and stuff, that the forsythia has actually hung on surprisingly well.
Yeah.
And then I've got a magnolia, I've got an Ann magnolia behind my house, and my Ann magnolia actually blooms a little bit later than the saucer magnolias. And it actually wasn't hurt at all. And it bloomed. It's still blooming. It's spectacular.
Yep.
So, you know, again, I thought maybe that as cold as that night was, it would create a little bit more havoc than what it did. And so, obviously, pretty excited to see that that, you know, wasn't as severe as I initially anticipated. And then also, you know, again, the pears, the flowering pears are starting to bloom right now. And wanted to kind of touch on that a little bit. Obviously, I'm in the industry. I do a lot of reading and research and try to keep current on everything. We still have a lot of people that are interested in and asking about flowering pears. And the flowering pears, the name that was crammed down our throat years ago was Bradford. And then they realized that the Bradford pears were actually a very, very poorly branched tree. And they would live till, you know, 10, 12, 15 years old when they finally created some nice size and a real nice statement in your landscaping. And then with wind, ice, and snow, the branches would start to fall out, break out huge chunks at a time. And you would end up eventually just going ahead and taking it out. So they came back in with improved Bradford, Cleveland Select, Aristocrat, Red Spire, all these different varieties of flowering pear. And the botanical name is Calorie, so it's Prunus Calorie, so it's the Calorie pear, some people call them. Now, and those were hybridized, and they were grown because of their pretty flowers. They have a nice bloom in the spring. They don't produce fruit. They don't produce pears. Now, the Cleveland Selects will produce a small pear that's maybe the size of your pinky fingernail, and usually don't create much of a mess. In some cases, some bear heavier than others. Some, you know, I guess can make kind of a mess, but certainly you're not dealing with a pear the size of your fist. It's the size of your little finger. And a lot of times, birds and rabbits during the wintertime will clean those up, so it doesn't create a huge mess. But those were, you know, touted as being a great tree and fast growing and planted everywhere and yada yada yada, and they are supposed to be sterile in that they wouldn't reproduce and the seeds wouldn't germinate.
And so what happens?
Well, Mother Nature has a way of doing her thing, and she certainly doesn't pay any attention to the scientists that say, hey, this is a great plant, and you can plant it everywhere, and nothing bad will happen. That tree, actually, the seeds are viable, and they will get eaten by birds and animals, and they will get deposited, especially, obviously, birds, you know, everywhere, roadsides. If you're out traveling this weekend and you're anywhere along I-75, if you're in Columbus, anywhere around the outer belt of Columbus, Dayton, Cincinnati, anywhere, look for all the beautiful white flowering trees in all the fence rows and, you know, areas that are, you know, off adjacent to highways and creek banks. And you'll see all these beautiful white flowering plants. Well, in most cases, those are all Catlery pears. So
that weren't supposed to be there because they were sterile and couldn't.
So Ohio actually, ODA, Ohio Department of Agriculture, has actually moved the flowering pear, the Catlery pear, into the invasive species category. So technically, we don't have any, and we won't carry any. And if you're out at there's still some out on the market as of, I think, 2022. They're not supposed to be grown, produced, reproduced, and they certainly are not to be sold wholesale or retail. So technically, you're not supposed to plant them, according to ODA. Now, if you plant them, nobody's going to come arrest you.
Yeah.
But from my standpoint, you know, invasive species are always an issue, concern with me. So, you know, we pretty much said no, we won't handle them. We still have people come in every day and want a flowering pear, and it's like, we don't handle them. Why don't you handle them? It's an invasive species. Well, what's that? And you tell them, and it's like, well, you know, I still want a flowering pear. But there's still some nurseries, wholesalers out there that are pushing them, and they're all deeply discounted. So you know, they're trying to get their money out of them versus bulldozing them into a pile and lighting them on fire, which is what Ohio wants you to do if you're a grower. But just if you're out shopping for trees, you know, please don't plant those. They are an invasive species. What happens is you get all those plants. They're a very short-lived tree. They're only going to live 20 years. And then, the branching habit, wind, ice, and snow is going to cause them to fail. So they're going to, you know, break branches, and they're just going to fall apart. But invasive species get into our native areas, and they outgrow all the competition. So they outgrow the red buds and the dogwoods and all the native stuff that's supposed to be there. And it creates kind of a monoculture where there's just one type of plant growing, and it's horrible for our environment. So you really want to listen and not plant them. And if you do have them, if you are, you know, if you have a lot of acreage or you're a farmer or something and you see them suckers growing in your fence rows, it's well worth the effort to stop and just knock them down, cut them off, do something with them to give the native species a chance to do what they're supposed to do. There hasn't been a huge, I mean, I guess to my knowledge, there hasn't been a huge eradication effort, mainly because there's not a lot of money for it, but there's just not a big eradication effort out there to try to remove them. But it is an issue, and they shouldn't be sold or planted. And in my day, you know, we planted a bunch of them. We sold them, and Cleveland Selects, Aristocrats, Red Spires were all varieties that I was very comfortable planting.
They weren't an invasive species because they're not going to reproduce.
Yeah, they tended to have a lot better branching habit than the Bradford pear, and so they didn't fall apart like Bradfords do. It's out there. You know, you're not supposed to buy them or plant them. So if you've got a garden center or box store that's pushing them, I certainly wouldn't, even if they are deeply discounted, I would recommend not planting them. There's so many other wonderful, beautiful trees. We've had a tendency at Nature's Green to try to move more towards native species in our area, this part of Ohio or this part of the Midwest, usually tend to thrive because obviously it's in its native area, so it can tolerate the temperatures. It can certainly tolerate our soil type, our winters, everything, because it's a native. If you bring stuff in, and I'm guilty, I mean, I'm a plant person, so I'm guilty of bringing, you know, neat European beech is a beautiful tree, obviously not native, but you know, they have a beautiful branching habit and incredible foliage, beautiful bark. So you know, I'm guilty of planting things because I think they look really cool. But again, we try to stick with maples and oaks and lindens and locusts as far as trees go, because those are natives, different variety. And there's lots of different varieties of oaks and maples that are native to our area. Mm-hmm. Going to give you tremendous fall color. And again, when you plant a native variety, they're tolerant to our soil type, temperatures, pests, you know, like diseases and insects, you know, that's they'll tolerate that because mm-hmm. it's a native. And so in this day and age, everybody has a smartphone, it seems like, and you can, if the person you're working with doesn't know what's native and what's not native, you can look it up. You can call me, email me. I can help anyway. But, you know, again, if they're selling plants, they probably should know, you know, what they're selling and what's native and not native. And you just want to make sure, you know, you make a good, smart purchase, because if you're purchasing a tree, you want to make sure that mm-hmm. that sucker's going to last you
now,
a long time.
Do a lot of people, you said, like these pears, besides being not sterile, and they're all taken over, do people plant trees that they know are only going to live 20 years? I don't know.
To me,
a tree is 100 years. You plant it and it's
well,
there.
Tree, certainly, you know, any tree that you plant should, you know, outlive us.
Yeah.
And not saying that I'm not planning on being around here very long, but yes, you are talking about, you know, trees, oaks specifically. I mean, they can live hundreds of years.
Yeah.
There's a white oak down in Spring Grove Cemetery in Arboretum in Cincinnati. Been there and kind of looked at it. Spring Grove Cemetery. There's a lot more to do in Cincinnati than just go to the Reds game, which, you know, watching the Reds is a freaking blast right now.
Right now it is pretty good.
But there is a 700 acre cemetery in Cincinnati.
700 acres?
Cemetery in Cincinnati.
Whew.
And it's been there since the early 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an arboretum. I mean, you know, hey, let's go on a picnic. Let's go to a cemetery. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. But Spring Grove is actually quite a destination. It's an arboretum and a cemetery. Mm-hmm. It's been around since the 1800s, probably before that. I bet there's stones in there from the 1700s. It's been around forever.
Yeah.
And it is an arboretum. There's a white oak down there that they estimate that's probably somewhere in the 300 to maybe pushing 400 year old range. And an arboretum is all the plants are labeled. And so you can kind of, and it's just unbelievable. It's a maze. It's very hilly and beautiful, and it's a maze of roads. And in the springtime down there, we actually went down there when I was at Ohio State and toured the place, because it is a spectacular arboretum that's very close to us. And just unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. All the trees and flowering shrubs and all the things. It's unbelievably meticulously taken care of. Lots of, I don't know if there's presidents down there, but there's Proctors and there's Gambles buried there.
Yep.
And,
Proctor and Gamble.
And there's Civil War veterans buried there. Mm-hmm. And it's an unbelievable place. But again, I guess my point, I'm off topic, is, you know, the tree should live a long time.
Yeah.
And that parcel of ground is absolutely spectacular. It's right off of Mitchell Avenue. If you're flying down I-75, you get off Mitchell Avenue, make a right and a left, and then it's got these big, huge stone gates coming in. I guess the best way to describe it is if you've ever been to like Arlington, and not to say that that place is Arlington, but it's sort of has an Arlington kind of a feel to it. It's quite majestic, and you just got to be respectful for, you know, what's there, what's who's there, and then of course, like I said, the landscaping and stuff is just, it's absolutely incredible. They have some yellow Buckeyes down there that have been in for a long time, and they kind of I think they're somewhere around 120 to 125 foot tall.
That's pretty big.
That's pretty big.
The Buckeye tree we used to have down at Fort Site Park, I think, got to like 40 or 50 feet before it died.
Yeah, and they have a huge lake system as you kind of come in, and there's bald, very majestic bald cypress all around the lake, and those suckers are, you know, 60, 70 feet tall. It's a neat place. Anyhow, yeah, a tree should last a long time. You know, I don't think people bought flowering pears initially thinking they'd only live so long, but again, the branching habit was incredibly poor, and that's what always happened, is the trees actually didn't die, but they would just get so big, the branching habit was horrible, and then you'd lose big sections and branches, and then the tree really bizarre, so you usually just ended up cutting it off and replacing it. But yeah, if you're planting a tree, you want to take into consideration a lot of different things, where it's going, look around you and see if there's sidewalks, driveways, home foundations, you know, make sure you've got enough room for it, and then look up and make sure there's wires, lights, electric lines, because you can get a tree big and beautiful and looking wonderful, and if it's near or under a DP&L line, they're going to send their guys in without any notification, and they're going to butcher the thing.
Yeah, they'll chop an L shape into to go around the wires. You see that all the time out in the country where they, you know, and it needs to be done.
It's unbelievably unbelievably
bizarre.
Unbelievably brutal what they can do to the shape and the majestic look of a beautiful tree. And yeah, I mean, they're trying to cover their rear ends as far as wind and losing power, but my goodness, they can really just massacre a beautiful tree. So again, that kind of gets it back into, especially if you're planting it or you're having somebody plant it, that gets back into, you know, you need to look around before you plant. And then also, you know, different varieties of trees. You know, I consider like three different, you know, kind of sizes. You've got like a small ornamental, and small ornamental trees are going to be, you know, maybe 6 to 12 foot. And then you kind of got a medium ornamental, which could be anywhere from, you know, like 12 to 25 foot would be kind of a medium ornamental. And then you've got shade trees, and shade trees can be 30 to 100 foot, depending on how long you're planning on living. Yep. Well, the tree's planning on living a long time. I guess how long are you going to be there to appreciate what it looks like? So we better get to a break.
Yep, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll be getting with more stuff from Steve Stone.
Get a great deal on Kubota utility tractors. Our powerful, versatile lineup is built to do it all. So whether you need to mow, rake, stack, lift, or pull, get it done right with a Kubota utility tractor. Right now, get a Kubota utility tractor for zero down and 0% APR, plus save up to $1,000. Now through March 31st. See us or go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Your local Kubota dealer is Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Working hard on another project? Maybe you need some practical advice, or perhaps you just want to find a great new tool. Let me be the first to welcome you in. Hi, I'm Mike with Wangler Hardware, and since 1916, this has been the place where the hardworking folks in our area go to get things done. Experience the tradition, selection, and service of Wangler Ace Hardware in Fort Recovery. Stop in and see that we're more than a hardware store. It's all here.
Looking to become a part of a company that uses the vision of their team members to assist them in becoming successful? Cooper Farms does just that. We utilize the ideas and visions of our team members to make our processes better, easier, safer today. The Fort Recovery Division of Cooper Farms is currently seeking individuals to fill open egg packaging and sanitation positions. To learn more about these positions, as well as other open positions, please visit cooperfarms.com/join our team. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
Wow. This is RJ with the Win on the Wabash Super Raffle. Be sure to mark your calendars for this year's event, August 27th and 28th, 2021, to be held at Ambassador Park in Fort Recovery, Ohio. This year's event will feature the Friday night Toe and Go Raffle, as well as the Saturday Super Raffle. We're set to give away up towards $1 million worth of cash and prizes this year. All details can be found on our website, wowraffle.com. Don't miss out on the event of the year, the 2021 WOW Super Raffle, August 27th and 28th in downtown Fort Recovery.
Wow.
We're back with Steve Stone on Fort Recovery Radio, Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone, and we were talking about trees. Did we cover everything we wanted to talk about there?
Well, I kind of think so. I mean, the question always comes back, you know, when's the best time to plant a tree around your house? And I always tell people last year was the best time.
Or 20 years ago.
Or 20 years ago was the best time to plant a tree. You know, we don't, got to tiptoe lightly, we don't put as much value in trees in our area because we're so agriculturally based, and sometimes it's to some guys that are farming a lot, it's they're a nuisance. It's easier to kind of bulldoze them down or track hoe them and dig them up and move them, so it's easy to farm, and I get all that. But again, trees are, I listen, and maybe it's because I'm in the industry, but I listen constantly to, politics, which drives me crazy. I don't know why I do it. But, they talk about the Green New Deal, and they talk about, environment and global warming. And I think, D.C., that they don't do anything well except argue. But I think the green industry, and I do not want to be confused with anything that comes out of AOC's mouth, but I think the green industry has done a really lousy job of grabbing onto the environmental concerns that everybody has. If I was in marketing for the Ohio Nurserymen's Association or whatever, I've already got all my marketing work figured out as far as, if you're concerned about, CO2, which everybody is, why is nobody talking about plants? Why is nobody talking about trees?
Yeah, because that takes carbon monoxide. Or dioxide out of the...
Why are the nursery people in general, why are we not on board with a consortium? I would gladly pay hundreds of dollars to a marketing firm to get, if not national, global marketing out there that says, you got a problem with the greenhouse gases? Let's turn to the green industry and say... What do you recommend? Well, you know what I recommend? Let's plant some trees.
Yeah.
Let's plant a bunch of trees. Let's plant a bunch of perennials. Let's plant a bunch of shrubs. Let's plant a bunch of plants.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of all the gravel and all the asphalt and all the concrete and let's plant some plants. Or, again, make more room for plants, trees. Yeah. Big, huge canopies. Huge, old, mature, majestic trees, with the huge canopies. I mean, obviously in the summertime when it's, blazing hot, it's going to be 15 to 20 degrees cooler under a canopy of a tree than it is standing out in your yard.
Yeah.
One
of the things I saw very recently, I can't remember where it was. I don't know if it's something I recorded, and I don't know if it was recorded a week ago or a month ago, but they're... for the poorer people in South America, they are chopping down the rainforests, which, and then they burn it, which causes pollution. And it was some crazy amount, like 5,000 acres a day or something like that. It was some crazy number. And that's been going on a long time. People talk about this air pollution, but nobody's going down there and saying, hey, you can't do that. It's understandable because those people are trying to make a living. They're trying to survive. They're trying to make a place where they can plant enough food so they can live. And I understand that. But instead of putting billions upon billions of dollars into
deforestation.
And to try to solve this CO2 problem, give that money to those people so they can buy food.
Right.
Keep the rainforest.
You're exactly right, and I've read a little bit, not a lot, but I've read a couple of different articles in regards to that. And what I didn't realize is, like, the rainforest specifically in South America, I don't remember the percentage specifically, but it was a huge number. I'm going to say it was like 50 to 60% of the trees and foliage and vegetation in those rainforests are undocumented and unnamed. So we have no idea what it is. Could possibly been never been touched, seen, or whatever.
Yeah.
Could possibly be a, you know, eat these. I mean, I don't want to sound stupid, but whatever. You know, you could find a cure for cancer, diabetes.
Right.
You could find anything down there.
Yeah. And I believe that's where aspirin came from, the bark of some tree, and I believe it was South America.
And so back to the same topic, if you bulldoze all that down and destroy all of it, A, you're kind of destroying us, and B, you know, can you imagine not knowing what stuff is? I mean, if that was, you know, again, I'm kind of more into plants.
Yeah.
I'm more into plants than I am animals. But, you know, they talk about it's just so devastating. And it is devastating when a species is, rendered extinct. And if that was a freaking spider monkey, people would be losing their minds.
Yeah, or whatever that toad was or something
right.
in the northwest that they couldn't do this or that.
It's plants, and there could be complete eradication of a whole variety of plant, and it's undocumented and unknown.
Yep.
So we're getting kind of deep, Neil. Saturday morning.
Yeah, we went from talking about petunias to to saving the world. So.
I think the green industry can do it.
Yes, when I was listening to this, now they were implying it, although they never said it, and they didn't give exact statistics. But they kept talking about this amount of CO2 and this and this and this. And they kind of this about the rainforests in South America. That was only about 2 or 3 minutes out of this almost an hour program, but they basically said, if we can stop doing this. Those things can, between that and carbon capture, you could basically solve the CO2 problem.
Well, and I think if you look at the statistics, I'm pretty sure the United States for sure is actually becoming greener and greener and greener with reforestation and replanting, because we're so efficient with farming, and that they do such an unbelievable job that they can get more bushels out of every acre, that we're not going to starve to death. I can go to the mall and walk around and realize there's a lot of people that ain't gonna starve to death anytime soon.
Well, maybe they should do that for a day or two,
a couple. And I think again the United States specifically is getting greener. There's more forest and vegetation than there ever has been. I mean, we're going the right direction, but again, honestly, kind of back to wrap it up as far as that topic goes, I think my industry has done a lousy job of trying to throw themselves into the forefront and saying, look at how much CO2 can we capture with billions of trees.
Yeah.
And it all makes a difference. And, I'm all for planting trees, and not because I sell them, just because I just think it's again, go to Spring Grove Cemetery and you'll understand. I mean, there's very few wide open spaces down there as far as the canopy. It's just nearly, most of that thing is completely canopied with trees. And so when you're walking through there, it's unbelievable. And I realize it is a cemetery, but it is an incredible place. And you go to Cincinnati Zoo. I mean, besides the animals, what attracts you to the Cincinnati Zoo? Well, it's also an arboretum.
Yeah.
And they spend nearly as much money on their plants as they do their animals. And I tend to, I tend not to look at the animals when I used to go there as much as like, oh my God, I haven't seen that variety, or what variety is that? And what's cool about it is it's a arboretum, so everything's labeled. So, you got everybody over here taking pictures of the elephant and the giraffe, and I'm over here taking pictures of this new variety of petunia or marigold. mold I've never seen before. So I'm taking pictures. I got to find these. I got to grow these. I got to figure out what, you know.
Everybody's saying, look at the monkey in the tree. And you're saying, why is that monkey in my tree?
get that thing out of my picture. I got to get that, scoot that thing over. I got to get a picture of that tree right there. I guess I get it. I guess I get it, honest, because Dad was stationed in Augusta, Georgia when he was in the service.
Oh.
And so he spent a year or year and a half in Augusta. And so he was always kind of attracted back to Augusta. When we used to go to Daytona back in the 70s, we'd always drive from here all the way down to Augusta. It was the first leg of our trip, and we spend a night or two in Augusta and then go down to Daytona. And so he's just always had a fascination with Daytona or with Augusta because there was a big army base there. I think it's still there. And that's where he spent a good part of his life when he was in the service. So he still has a few friends in that area. So from obviously years ago, and again years back, we were able to get some practice round tickets for the Augusta to the Masters. And so I've been down there, I don't know, 7 or 8 different times. And Dad, when he was healthy, enjoyed going. And it was always so funny to go there with him because, you know, Tiger Woods could walk by from me to you away.
Yeah.
And Dad's standing there and he's totally got his back to Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus or whoever it was because he's like, oh my God, look at that azalea. You know, oh my God, look at those dogwoods. And if you've never been to Augusta National, again, the grounds is unlike anything you've ever seen. I don't care if you've been to Muirfield. I don't care if you've been to the Elks. I don't care if you've been to Firestone in Akron. I don't care where you've been. There's nothing like Augusta. There's nothing like Augusta National. It is unbelievable.
And we had Kirby on this week on Sports Talk with our stuff, and I happened to look. He was talking about one of the plants, and I was looking at stuff, and each one of those holes has a specific
theme
yep. to it. I don't remember any of them specifically, but there's
dogwood, azalea, all of that. Pampas grass. Mm-hmm. All of them have a name, and then it's incredible. Again, even if you don't like golf, it's if you ever have an opportunity to, you know, go there, practice round. Getting tickets for the actual event is nearly impossible, but you can still occasionally stumble across some practice round tickets. Definitely worth it.
Yep. So, about time for another break.
Better take a break.
You have to go to actual real work here in a little while.
I know. Yep. Not looking forward to it.
Well, just tell your boss you're sick. Call in sick. We'll be back in a minute.
It's time to begin planning your landscape improvements for this summer. Nature's Green Nursery can design a beautiful, cost-effective, no-maintenance landscape for your home or business with quality trees, shrubs, perennials, soils, and mulch. Steve Stone has a degree in horticulture landscape. Call Nature's Green at 419-375-2322 today and set up a free landscape design and evaluation. Check out Nature's Green on the web or like them on Facebook. Nature's Green Nursery on State Route 119 just east of Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Proudly serving the Fort Recovery area for over 23 years, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has the expertise to handle any dirt work you need. From installing waterways and building pads to demolition work and septic system installation, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has all the equipment you need to get the job done right. Does your driveway need some fresh gravel or do you need some dirt hauled in? We can take care of all your hauling needs as well. Give Brian a call at 419-852-6655. Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage. Go Indians.
Do you have everything you need for Easter dinner? Wayne Street Market has everything you need to take care of your crew, from fresh vegetables and other side dishes to the ham and anything else you need, they have it all. And don't forget to order your veggie or fruit trays and your meat and cheese trays. Order ahead at 375-2865 to be sure they have it ready for you. Easy and convenient, make Wayne Street Market your Easter headquarters, the hometown store that saves you more.
Fort Recovery.
Perry baseball team is having an apparel sale. Here's a great opportunity to show your support for the program by getting some items featuring Fort Perry baseball. Fleece blankets, carry-all totes, stadium seats, jerseys, long and short sleeve t-shirts, hooded sweatshirts, and more, with most clothing items available in women's, men's, and youth sizes and styles. Get your order form from any of the players or at Purple Post. Pick out what you want and return it by Thursday, April 8th. You can send it with your student to the school office or drop it off at the Purple Post. Be sure to show your support for the team this season with your own official Fort Recovery baseball apparel. Again, you can get your order form now from any player or at the Purple Post. Be sure to return it to the school or the Purple Post by Thursday, April 8th. Thanks for supporting our Fort Recovery baseball program.
We're back. A walk through the garden with Steve Stone.
Yep, talking about the whole segment here about trees. I guess I probably should shift gears and try to cram a little bit more info in here. This, again, being the time of year that it is, gosh, nearly the middle of April, seeding is, you know, always a topic that comes up and people ask a lot of questions. And we've hit on that a little bit in some different segments prior to this, but right now is a good time to do your seeding. If you've got bare areas that you want to reseed, overseed, if you're putting a new lawn in, renovation, whatever, you know, right now's the second best time of the year to do it. The best time would probably be late August through September. April, May, early May would be your second best time to do that work. You know, we are to the point where I think soil temperatures are getting up there warm enough that you're going to have success getting that, you know, new seed down. If you've got bare areas or bare spots, if they're the size of your fist or smaller, it's not worth the time, effort, and energy to try to seed those spots. Especially if you've got like bluegrass, just fertilize that area or fertilize your whole lawn. Those areas will, the way bluegrass grows is kind of rhizomatously, so it grows through underground tillers. Those areas should fill in relatively quickly with some warm weather, some fertilizer, and a rain shower occasionally. So don't kill yourself trying to get those to fill in if you're awfully particular like myself. Those will fill in with some fertilizer. If you've got some larger bare areas, you need to, what I often see is people go out and buy a good quality, you know, seed mix, and then they'll just go out and just throw a handful here, there, and everywhere. That's not going to give you probably the results that you're looking for. You really need to take some kind of a rake of some sort, a heavy garden rake, lawn rake, some, loosen that ground up, scuff that ground up. This time of year, the ground is, because of the winter freezing and thawing, it's actually pretty loose. And so just a light raking kind of loosens that ground up, pulls some of that dead tissue, the dead blades, loosens all that up, gets some air down to the soil, and also gets good seed soil contact. You're not going to get germination if you don't have good seed soil contact. That seed has to be laying pressed or somehow against the soil, because that seed has to imbibe water from the soil. It has to absorb moisture before it can germinate. So just going out there and throwing some seed down on top of a bare spot probably is not going to, you're going to be disappointed with the germination percentage that you're going to get. Good quality seed mix, you should have somewhere probably between 80 and 95% germination if you have good seed soil contact. If you go out and throw it down and you come out a couple days later, a week later, and say, well, none of this germinated, well, it's not the seed's fault. It will accomplish what you want, but you have to set it up for it to succeed. And that's, again, kind of working the soil up and getting the seed down. You got to be really careful too. We've talked previous weeks about pre-emergent herbicide with fertilizer. Make sure if you're seeding any space, spot, or area, you cannot put pre-emergent like pendimethalin. You can't put pre-emergent down with the fertilizer and put your grass seed down and have any luck. Because the pendimethalin, they're actually, and I can't remember the name of it, I'd have to look it up. There is a new, I should say it's new, it's probably 4 or 5, maybe 6 years old already. There is a new type of pre-emergent that actually is a smart herbicide, and it does know the difference, believe it or not, between bluegrass and crabgrass. And you can apply it and get But it's really expensive, and there's not a lot of people out there selling it unless you're in my industry. But the typical stuff that you're going to get at any of your garden centers, hardware stores, whatever, you can't apply that material with the herbicide in it and your seed, because that herbicide is going to hinder the germination of your crabgrass. It's also going to completely annihilate your bluegrass that you just spent $3 a pound on to put down. So if you're going to do seeding, you have to fertilize it. You have to fertilize that new grass. That new seeds that you're putting down has to be fed, but you cannot put a herbicide mixture with that and, well, I'm going to put this down in the seed and I'm done. No, you can't do that. You have to, if you're seeding the backyard, it's fine to put your pre-emergent on the front yard with fertilizer, but you need just fertilizer, seed starter fertilizer for any area that you're seeding. You're going to be really disappointed if you use the same pre-emergent and the fertilizer and then put your seed down, your bluegrass, whatever you're applying, you're not going to have any success. So be very careful of that. I've had clients ask me, you know, questions. Well, this seed didn't come up at all. I'm like, well, fertilizer did you put down? And they'll show me the bag, and I'm like, ooh, that's the problem. So again, if you have any questions,
well, why didn't they tell me that when I bought it?
Might be where you bought it.
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, please, you know, support your local, you know, hardware stores and all your local, you know, landscape companies and all your local nurseries in the area, because those guys live it, you know, day in and day out.
So you're saying the guy at Home Depot doesn't know as much as you do?
I'm saying potentially the box stores, there are people that probably know what they're talking about.
But they don't work whole time that place is open.
Trying to find them yep. when you're there yep. is problematic. And they, like everybody, every other business in the United States right now, they just probably don't have enough of those good people, mm-hmm. Which I can vouch for. We've got great people. We just don't have enough great people. But yeah.
You're saying you could use some help.
Absolutely.
Somebody want to work?
Oh, my goodness.
Call Steve. Stop on out and
yep.
pass the drug test.
Well, no, somebody asked me what I'm looking for, and I'm like, well, if they can read a wristwatch and they can show up at the same time every day, and if I put a mirror in front of their face and they steam it up, you're pretty much hired.
If you can breathe.
if you're breathing and can tell time, we need you. It's tough. It's tough in any of the trades and service industries. It's tough. But anyhow, again, with this day and age, I feel like my information is irrelevant because that I'm giving, because you can Google anything and look stuff up. But I think a lot of people don't do that. But again, if you're at a, you know, box store, you know, you can look stuff up. You can look some of the plants up, because again, you know, some of the people that are working there just simply, you know, maybe were in electronics last week.
Yes. So yeah. Or at McDonald's drive through.
Yeah. So, you know, again, you know, shop your local guys, because they live it. They live it and breathe yeah. it.
And they have to, they'll see around town the people that they've been working with. And so they kind of want to do a good job so they don't have to walk across the street and hide from you.
I remember something I really wanted to get to that I need to squeeze in here, and it yep. was back with the trees. When you're out shopping, again, and you're looking for trees and shrubs, there's growers all over the United States, and specifically kind of, I guess you would call Tennessee Midwest. There is an area of Tennessee, or a city, I believe, in a county called McMinnville. In McMinnville is...
That's probably Granger County.
Is probably... Well, you are the rocker of Tennessee.
I keep hearing people talking about Granger tomatoes that you can get in about April or May, and they are fantastic.
Well, there's a...
And the weather just seems to, you know, so I'm guessing that may be the same thing. Go ahead, but what you're saying.
There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of nurseries down there. And for what I'm, you know, can go around my wholesalers that are relatively local in the, you know, Dayton area, or up around Avon, Ohio, which is a couple hours from here, which is up by south of Cleveland. You know, we buy everything, I would say, local, mm-hmm. Which is hugely important. The box stores a lot of times will go into McMinnville, and that's, you know, when, again, because their prices are really, really inexpensive for plants, because mm-hmm. there's so many nurseries and they're all competing for business. And so, it, you know, a tree that might cost, you know, $100 from a wholesaler up here, you know, literally could cost $50 down there. And so, your box stores specifically, and yes, I will throw them all collectively under the bus, they're going to be going to those bigger suppliers and wholesalers, and they're going to be buying truckloads of plants, and they're going to get them for half of what the local guys are buying them for. They're going to bring them up here and mark them up and sell them, and they're going to be less expensive. There's a rule for sure in the industry that if you're selling, buying, propagating, growing, selling plants, you want to be within about 100 miles of what they call the seed source, mm-hmm. which is where the plant kind of came from, originated. We talked about native varieties. So a red maple that's grown in Montgomery County is going to come up to Mercer County, and it's going to grow extremely well because soil type, temperatures, pH, all that stuff's nearly the same. If you bring something up from McMinnville, which is about 400 miles from here, and you're in the middle of Tennessee versus kind of the middle of Ohio, Neil, how well do you think that tree's going to do?
Sometimes okay.
At best.
Yeah, okay.
At best, sometimes okay. And I've seen it happen with containers, and I've seen it happen with, you know, soil, bald and burlap trees that you mm-hmm. kind of look at the soil and, you know, people are like, why is that ground orange?
Yeah.
You know, that's because it came from Tennessee or it came from down south. And yeah. again, you transfer that. So soil type, soil textures, pH, temperatures, seed source, everything is from the middle of Tennessee. You bring that up to the middle of Ohio, plant it, boy, you got yourself one heck of a good deal because you saved yourself $55 from the guy next door. Yeah, get back with me on that $55 about 2 years after you plant it, because that tree is going to struggle, and yeah. it's probably not going to grow, and if it does grow, it's going to grow at about half the rate of something that's locally sourced and locally grown.
And cost you twice as much to take care of it, to baby it so it can,
absolutely.
So it can survive.
That's your topic of the day.
Ah, and we almost lost it because we were jibber-jabbering about other stuff.
But, you know, that's very, I mean, honestly, that's very, very, very important. You know, seed source, where the plants were, you know, grown and how they were grown and soil and everything makes a difference to transplanting it into your place and how it's going to develop, grow, thrive. It makes a huge difference. So. Mm-hmm. That was everything I had for today, I think. I got to get to work.
Yes, you do. Your boss is calling.
That's right.
We'll be back next week. Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone.
Thanks for joining us again this week for a Walk in the Garden with Steve Stone. If you have a gardening question you'd like Steve to answer, just email him at steve@naturesgreennursery.com and he'll answer it on a later show. Be sure to tune in again next week for A Walk in the Garden with Steve Stone.